My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be able to make friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach. You call me 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. When the book is written on this economy right now, it's going to come down to something that is pretty pedestrian. It's going to come down to chips. The chips in this bag and the chips on this rack. Now, I know it sounds like a gimmick. Maybe it is. But if you understand the zeitgeist of this market, if you really want to get it, these two types of chips tell you a great deal of the drama going on in the stock market and in the entire country. So on a good day, with the Dow advanced 130 points, S&P gained 1.03%, NASDAQ jumped 1.51%. Allow me to explain. Let's start with these chips, the semiconductors, okay? Right now, there's a veritable feeding frenzy for the chip makers. Investors can't eat just one. The SMH, the chief semiconductor ETF, is just going crazy. Buyers are chowing down on this stuff like piranhas in the Amazon basin. The darn SMH is up nearly 34% year-to-date and more than 180% from its lows in the big bottom, October of 2022. Meanwhile, NVIDIA, obviously the undisputed leader of the group, is up 87% year-to-date and 757% from its lows just 17 months ago. 757%, people. On the other hand, though, this bag of chips is under assault. The price of a bag of potato chips has risen 45%, while the cost of producing them has increased by about 40% over the last few years. But unlike semiconductors, potato chips haven't gotten any better over that period. Same product, much higher price. The first, NVIDIA, has gone up so much that if you owned its stock, you wouldn't know the difference between the cost of this bag of generic chips and some name brand Lay's. These prices would mean nothing to you. That's the beauty of investing well. But for most Americans, they can't invest well because the cost is everything. Food costs are at the heart of the dilemma facing Americans. You have to eat, and eating's a lot more expensive than it used to be. The pandemic led to a level of price increases that we hadn't seen in decades. Back in 2019, here's a good example. A basket of food costs $156. Now it's $210. Most Americans don't have enough spare money to buy a share of NVIDIA, for heaven's sake. 36% of Americans have more credit card debt than emergency savings. Another 19% have less than $1,000 in savings altogether. Putting it all together, only 45% of Americans have more than $1,000 in savings. Well, it's not much left after you buy an NVIDIA piece of stock, is it? Let alone a chip. We'll get into that in a second. What they make goes to shelter, which is a big. It may go to gasoline. Fortunately, it's not that bad, but apparel, which is holding in. Food, though, is disastrous. And if you're eating store brand potato chips, you probably can't invest in microchips. But for the haves, what can I say? I've been investing for 45 years, and it's difficult for me to find an analog that can even rival this moment. Sure, there were periods when Texas Instruments led this market in the 80s. There were long stretches when you had to own Intel in the 90s because it was unstoppable. In the interim, there might have been a chip that could ignite an AMD or a Monolithic Memories or the old National Semi, but nothing like NVIDIA. Maybe the personal computer revolution comes close, but not of late. See, the contrast between the haves and the have-nots, I find, is disconcerting, and I hope you do too. The cost of food is sapping the average consumer, and it seems like no one has the ability to do anything about it. Yes, Costco reported tonight, and the fantastic retailer is trying to hold the line on pricing using their signature Kirkland brand. It's working, at least if you're a club member. Now, the stock is off after hours, but there's nothing really significant to explain that other than the fact that what we call came too hot into the print or the quarterly results. Remember, they report every month, so there's no surprise by the last month. Now, Kroger, though, reported this morning, and this supermarket stock led the S&P 500 because they've been cutting prices, where they've been introducing their own private label brands. They're going to do 800 new private label brands this year. That's how you keep cost down. Meanwhile, endless versions of personalization, digitizations are causing sales to go up while bolstering their margins. Walmart's actively keeping tabs on its suppliers and wants to keep prices the same. But try as the great retailers are doing, and they are trying. They can't get prices back to pre-pandemic levels. It's just not working. Now, the presidency may hang in the balance of this bag of chips and food that surrounds them in the grocery aisles. Even though we've got low unemployment, voters really, really hate inflation. Well, and this group of chips, the ones that are so abstruse and cut your hands if you're not careful, these guys, well, let me tell you something. These are what we call chips for the enterprise. Right now, the enterprise, which are corporations, is the place to be. Thanks to higher interest rates, the end of additional food stamp aid, and the resumption of student loan payments, the consumer's loyal, totally strapped. They really are. Mood is grim at the register. But the enterprise, whole different story. Consider the semiconductor aisle. These chips are incredibly expensive, but they deliver businesses such a big return on investment that it makes them addictive. Now, on Instagram recently, Mark Zuckerberg let you know that he can't just eat one. He said Meta will have 350,000 super high-end NVIDIA H100 graphics processing units and the computing power equivalent of 600,000 of them by the end of the year. A single H100 chip costs over $40,000. Most Americans need to be careful about how many potato chips they could afford, or they wouldn't be buying these knockoffs, right? Now, the ironic comparisons don't really stop there. I mean, no, it's a little bit of a dramatic license I want to take, but what's really driving the demand for the NVIDIA H100s? Generative artificial intelligence, machines that think and accelerated computing, which allows these thinking machines to work at lightning speed. We didn't know all that much about these twin concepts until the orders started flowing into NVIDIA. Right about the same time that many discovered the wonder that was ChatGPT. GPT. That's driving the prices up. But how about potato chips? The only thing that can drive these chips down in price, other than the furious attempts to hold the line by Costco, Walmart, and Kroger, the new class of weight loss drugs known as GLP, GLP-1, GPT, GLP. And GLP-1 is made by Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. If you can afford these drugs or get your insurance to pay for them, then you really can stop at just one potato chip, if you need them at all. Go right by that aisle. Not interested. You need to think of the GLP-1s as willpower enhancers with a secret weapon. They make really great, tasty things, kind of taste blah. Yesterday, Brown-Forman's Jack Daniels had real bad numbers. Like every other company challenged by GLP-1s, Brown-Forman claims the new class of drugs isn't doing anything. I don't know, by this point, I find that hard to believe. The truth is, whatever you imagine a Jack and Coke would taste like after a hard day of work, just imagine you're drinking some brown bubbly soda water that's expensive, because that's what it feels like when you're on GLP-1s. No wonder people don't want to pay 10 bucks and change for a privilege of drinking it. By the same token, potato chips just don't beckon when you're on these drugs. They practically eliminate cravings for junk food and alcohol. If enough people take these drugs, then the chips die on the aisle and the price comes down. The GLP-1s, they are the accidental price cutters. Look, you're watching this show, which means you might have bought some NVIDIA or some AMD or some Broadcom, which indeed is trading down in after hours after a good quarter, but lighter than expected revenues and no boost to the full year outlook. You might get a good chance to buy some Broadcom next week. You probably want to do it. Member of the club will tell you everything. Maybe one day the productivity gains we get from these microchips will make potato chips more affordable. Maybe the GPT derivatives can team up with the GLP-1s and create some wealth that can be saved. But right now, the bottom line is that the paths of the people who invest in the microchips or the enterprises that buy them are very different from the paths of people buying knockoff potato chips. And perhaps never the twain shall meet, at least unless something big changes. And I've got to tell you, my crystal ball, you can't see that far. I'm going to go to Isaac in Utah. Isaac.
Hi, Jim. So thanks for your time, first of all. I'm the founder of the Cramer Double Inverse Fan Account, that's on Facebook and Instagram. And my question for you is, do you think General Electric will continue to outperform its industry, yes or no?
Yes. I mean, I had nice conversations with Larry Culp all the time, including today. And I think that you saw what happened when they had their analyst. It was up another 7, 52-week high, an extraordinary performance by Larry. And yes, now, I have to say, I disclose, I worked for GE and I have GE stock. So I don't want people to say I'm going nuts for Larry Culp, but man, is he good. And that stock goes higher. I want to go to Rose in Pennsylvania. Rose.
Hey, Jim, from your old hometown, Philly.
Fantastic.
I have a question about Micron. I have a small position, and I was thinking about adding to it. It seems to sort of not go up as fast as some of the others, and I just wanted your expert wisdom and insight into if there's anything in the company that I might be missing.
Okay, I've studied Micron over the years, and I think that Sanjay Mehrotra would say that I am as good a student of Micron. I'm not hubris as anybody else he's ever met. And when you have these moves like Micron, they tend to last for about 18 months, and they go much further than they have already. I don't want you to buy it into the scrum that was up today, but I do think you can get that stock in the mid-90s to high 80s, and I want you to pull the trigger immediately and buy some more. Let's go to Ted Wash in Washington. Ted.
Hi, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah.
Just wondering, Jim, we've had Starbucks since day one back in the 80s. course, it's split many times. Two or three years ago when Howard Schultz left, it was $124. Today it closed at $90.
Indeed.
What is your professional opinion, Jim?
Okay, Lakshman Narasimhan is the CEO. He's been doing a very good job. He actually gave some talks in New York in the last couple of days. I've heard what he had to say. I think the big problem is twofold. One is that China is just really, really tough right now. I don't know when that's going to be able to, you know, wake up from its slumber. And two, there were some protests at his companies, at the company's stores that I think were ill-founded, but they happened. And that hurt domestic. So domestic, not great, and China, not great. And that's producing a $90 stock, which to me says, buy it, because neither one of them is going to stay like that. That's what we're doing for the trust. Pick some up. Let's go to Robert in New York. Robert.
Hey, Jim, I got to tell you, you continue to steer us in the right direction.
Thank you.
You saved me over $50,000 in the last 7 days, okay? And you did it, you said Viking is not the one that came out with this, that NVO, blah, 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 blah. I pulled the money off the table. You saved me. I made a ton of money on it.
Oh, thank you. When I see too much enthusiasm, I do want to pull back. Look, I told club members today, I wish Broadcom hadn't run up into the quarter. I don't like that endless enthusiasm. Viking had way too much enthusiasm. It was too hot. Had to take the profits. How can I help you now?
Exactly. We never mess up when we listen to you, and I hope you're around forever.
I just try to make fewer mistakes than I do good ideas. But thank you for that.
Keep doing it, Jimbo.
I will. I'm not going anywhere. Anyone think I'm going anywhere?
No.
I ain't going anywhere. I do the show Saturday, just nobody tapes it. What's up?
Well, okay. Anyway, the average price target for this stock that I'd like to talk about is $173. This is based upon 23 Wall Street analysts with 12-month price targets. The highest analyst is saying 263. The lowest is 75. So you got this company. I own it at $125. I'm not going to tell you. Don't say I'm a pig for not cashing in. But should we cash in our coins on Coinbase?
Okay, look, I think Coinbase is in a unique position. A lot of people are shorted. People didn't think that the SEC would find a way to actually just look the other way when it came to the ETFs. There's going to be an Ethereum ETF. I would not sell this until the day of the Ethereum ETF. When that ETF starts, I think you're going to get a good price, and that may be where you want to unload some. But no, this is momentum stock that's heavily shorted. I kind of, for people who are aggressive, it's a real good situation. All right, the paths of the people who invest in these microchips are on a very different path from those who are buying these or knockoff potato chips. And sadly, the two probably will never meet unless something big changes. And I sure wish it could, but I don't control that. Everybody, tonight, the Fortune Brands, the company behind Moen and Masterlock, has its finger on the pulse of the U.S. home repair and remodel market. Let's hear what we have to say, because that market's been stalled by high rates. Then, from home fixtures to home building, I'm also learning more about faux wood deck from AZEK, on how the company's able to turn in and stop really pretty good top and bottom line beat, because decking is something that is still selling real well. Hey, by the way, stay tuned. Gap report after the bell, and with the new CEO at the helm, how's this company faring? Oh, man, you do not want to miss what I think is going to be a blockbuster story. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
How do we feel about everything connected to housing? Now that it's crystal clear, we won't be getting anything close to those half dozen rate hikes that much of Wall Street was expecting just a couple months ago. Take Fortune Brands Innovations, that's formerly known as Fortune Brands Home and Security, which makes water fixtures like the highest end, fully automated, gorgeous faucets, premium doors, composite decking products, all sorts of locks and various other security products. Here's a stock that rallied 33% last year, with the entire gain coming just when it should have, November, December, after long-term interest rates finally started coming down. It had a decent start to 2024, up 6.7% year to date, but suddenly lagging the broader market now. Well, in part because we don't know how quickly rates are going to come down. When Fortune Brand Innovations reported at the end of January, they gave you a solid top and bottom line beat with a healthy full year forecast. And this is what's really important: extremely robust cash flow. But management's earnings guidance for the current quarter came in light, spooked people, I don't know, it was down 4% the next day. It's rebounded, of course, since then. So what do we do with it now? Let's check in with Nick Fink. He's the CEO of Fortune Brands and Innovations to get a better read of the situation. Mr. Fink, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so Nick, if you had told me that you could do this level of business with rates going up gigantically and still have this free cash flow and buy back a ton of stock, I would have said it's impossible. How are you doing it?
Look, firstly, the market is a lot better than people give it credit for. Okay. So you had the biggest affordability crunch in 50 years. In 50 years, and consumers still stuck around, right? And you saw it through the home builders, building more houses, people are buying the houses. And so there's been a resilience, but then inside of that, we focused on our own transformation and really looking for the parts of the market that had what we call supercharged growth, right?
Well, you shuffled the portfolio and you gave out fours and six of spades and you got back with kings and queens and aces. And one of the things that I thought was so incredible in water innovations, you are now really, you dominate. And you dominate in a way that's good for people, good for Earth, mm-hmm. good for the workers. And I think you should just talk about that, because it's very rarely you'll ever see a CEO just say, we've got a product and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, it's the coolest thing. And it gets me out of bed every day. So, you know, we've taken something that was a showerhead and faucet business and we've turned it into a whole home residential water management business. And it starts with our AI-powered product. You and I have talked about that in the past. It's not just AI yesterday. We've been doing this for about 4 or 5 years. But it can read water throughout your whole house. It can shut off your main if you're going to have a catastrophic leak, completely save your house, save it from being damaged, save it from mold, and then use a whole ecosystem of products around it to make it even better. It's a game changer, but your point, those leaks cost our planet, not just water, but a ton of carbon, and we're going to put an end to that.
And I think that people are starting to realize if you bought a nice house because the times were good and rates were low, it's worth it to think, oh my, there's going to be a vicious cold snap like we had in Kansas City, -9, and your house is going to just be destroyed.
Yeah, we saw exponential growth through the Southeast, places like Texas with those bursts in January. Huge growth in interest, the online conversation. So you've seen consumers get there.
But now, outdoors, there seems to be a little more sensitivity to rates. I mean, when you have those really premium doors and really premium decking, it seems like it puts pause for a moment that repair and renovation, people are pausing a little bit. Because I would have thought by now they would have said, you know what, I have to stay in this house forever because I have a low mortgage rate. It's time for my place to look better. Will that happen?
Right. You saw a bit of a lag, and particularly also that's a fairly big new construction business. And so you saw more of a dip and then a bump back. And then you're right, R&R has been a little bit slow to come back. And, you know, but we're seeing it sequentially get better, a month on month, quarter on quarter. And I suspect by the time we get to the end of this year, you're going to see it back to a very healthy long term growth rate of 3.5 to 5.5.
Wait, now you obviously have conviction because you take that free cash flow and the stock is after a good run, but it's going to be paused because you do have obviously connection rates. It seems like you're buying as much as you can. Why?
We're in there because we think there's huge value and we're very strategic about it. We're very disciplined. We look at our strat plan. We look at historic multiples and we decide if there's value to be had in the stock. We go in and we do it. And there is.
You had to have been surprised, like the rest of the world, that the Chinese real estate market would basically, in our terms, crash. Now, it's only, 7%, but it can still hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens there?
I think that changes from what's been a new construction-led market to an R&R market. And overly developer-led for many, many, many years. Yes. And now those cities are getting old. And our share is really concentrated in the big cities. And so as they get older, we're seeing growth in the R&R channel. And our team's done a great job keeping that business as profitable as the rest of the company. In managing through the downturn. So it's great optionality for the future.
Okay.
That's what we think about.
It's not, you know, I never thought at one point that I saw you this summer that I'd have to start hearing about Red Sea, Cape Horn. I mean, no, you have to worry about where you get your products, and it did add to your cost, correct?
Yeah. Well, it added to inventory. So we put about 10 days more inventory on the water just to be safe, taking care of customers and consumers, number one priority. I expect that'll come out by the end of the year, but we just want to be cautious. And you do learn with a complex business, we have inventory all over the world moving all the time.
Now, I was struck by, I thought that you would be doing more by this point in security because you have a trusted brand. And if you have a trusted brand, we use Century Furnaces. You can put that on anything and we'll take it because we know that it seems like you could nuclear war doesn't take that stuff out. How concentrated do you want to be in that particular vertical?
Look, I think the right parts of security. And so we closed on a great acquisition in June, which was Yale in August for the U.S. and Canada. And now we're in the process of bringing that business together. But the real unlock, it was for us to get our hands on that team and their connected product know-how. And so as we bring that whole business together with the help of that team, it gives us a lot more optionality to look for really, really good parts of that market to add on in the future.
But a lot of people tell me they're always looking for little acquisitions. You guys are in the market all the time. Now, you just want to go higher and higher in. Is that the trick?
It's got to be a brand, right? It's got to be a brand that's innovation-led, that's got a moat around it that consumers are willing to pay for, and that we can innovate behind.
Well, you've done a remarkable job, a great last year. This year starting much better than what you could expect given rates. And I understand why you're buying the stock. It's the right thing to do. That's Nick Fink. He's the CEO of Fortune Brands Innovations. Terrific stock. Had him on last May. It's been a great one. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, making the outdoors feel more like yours. Is a sunny season approaching? Kramer has a patio player on deck. Keep it here.
As you know, today we're taking a hard look at the building product space, where we've got a bunch of stocks that have been running just as hard as the home builders. Consider the case of AZEK, which makes composite material products that are used as an alternative to wood. It makes for great decking that requires far less maintenance, as I know, because I'm all AZEK. Just a few weeks ago, AZEK turned an impressive quarter, a top and bottom line beat, with management raising their full-year forecast. Stock shot up more than 14% on the news, continuing to climb. It's now up almost 30% for the year. So can it keep running? Let's dig deeper with Jesse Singh. He's the president and CEO of AZEK to learn more. Mr. Singh, welcome back to Mad Money.
So great to be here. Thanks, Jim.
Jesse, I'm so glad you're here. We talk so much about tech on the show, and because people think that tech can be up 40, 50% in a year. I think that you're up almost 100% since we saw you last.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Well, first, if you just step back and look at our business between our TimberTech brand and our AZEK brand, we built a business over a long period of time. Our 10-year CAGR is 12%. And, you know, our focus has been on long-term performance. And there's times when the market recognizes that performance, and we're clearly happy with the progress. But, you know, we think there's a long runway ahead of us.
But if you told me that a building products company was going to have the worst rate-taking cycle in history and that you were going to have these kinds of numbers, I would say that's just not possible. You've got some sort of secret sauce going here.
Yeah, I mean, so if you take a look at our markets, the vast majority of our markets are wood. And so for us, we play in a market that is actually four times the size. So we're constantly converting wood into our types of decking or exteriors. And that's always an additive growth element. So in almost any cycle, we tend to be very, very resilient. If you look at our calendar year performance in 2022, we grew 4%. And in last year in 2023, we grew 10%. So there's a resilience here that's just long-term, and we expect to continue.
Why is repair and renovation so much better, and the decking of repair and renovation the best, most solid growth of anything to do with a house? How'd that happen?
Yeah, well, first, there's been a long-term focus on the outside of the home.
Yes.
People have started to look over the last decade at their square footage, and it's a terrific opportunity to expand square footage. And in our particular case, as I said, it's a very resilient sector. But between new products and constantly converting the market and expanding the market, we're able to sustain those double-digit growth.
Well, speaking of resilient, this was before I met you, but I subsequently told you. I had to do my Sure Place every 5 years. And I haven't done it in a very, very long time because I switched to this AZEK. The guy told me, Jim, why do you keep using wood? The wood proposition is something that's in our heads. I think when I heard how much is recycled, then I feel better. But then when I heard how much is flame, that it doesn't propagate flame. I said, this is best. Everyone should get an insurance break if they use your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key characteristics, we've got a proprietary line that's made out of recycled PVC, 60% PVC. One of the benefits of that product is it looks like exotic hardwoods. It's almost indistinguishable. I think it's the product you have down.
Yes.
One of the side characteristics of that is it's Class A flame spread. So it meets certain incredibly high standards of not propagating flame, which, of course, in a lot of geographies, you think about embers floating from a fire, it will not propagate that flame. And so we're seeing really nice growth in those areas that want high aesthetics, which we provide, environmental sustainability, and then also the ability to really make the house safer from potential fires.
Right now, you and I know that nothing sells itself. You got these 200, you got a great sales force, but it seems like that wherever you go, you seem to take share from the big boxes, from all the stores. It's almost as if when I first met you, that you had, didn't have a big chunk of these big places, but now you're the guy.
Yeah, we have we play in two channels, the pro channel and the big boxes, as you said, and the DIY channel. Because we've got such a great value proposition, those 200 salespeople focused on contractors, a differentiated product, we've been able to continue to expand our position both in the pro channel, think of Builders FirstSource, right, those kinds of companies, and with the retailers. And so it really comes down to servicing the customer better and both those channels, recognizing that we've got a differentiated product.
Fantastic. I know you. I just added up. You added some space in Aliquippa near Pittsburgh, and someone on the conference call said, well, wait a second, Trex has got a huge capacity coming on. That didn't seem to faze you at all, did it?
We, over the last couple of years, both of us have added a lot of capacity. We tend to operate on focusing in on value. That capacity is necessary for us to continue to expand the business. So the fact that more capacity is coming online to us is an indication of just the future trajectory. And then the capacity we added in Pittsburgh is really to focus on a wood look type siding that starts to in an adjacency for us where we can convert cedar to our types of materials. And so part of our expansion play is, through the AZAC brand, moving into adjacencies, including really specialty siding.
Now, you're also a finance guy. You bought back a huge amount of stock. You've got a great reputation for being doing when the stock is low. You put the money when the stock's low, you buy the stock. But as it goes up, obviously, you're looking for opportunities. Wow, what a chart. What's next? At these levels, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah, we throw off a lot of cash. If you just look at our balance sheet and where we're going, we should have a reasonable amount of cash at the end of the year. As you mentioned, we took out about 7% of our shares in the last 2 years. We would expect to continue that process of using our capital to continue to buy. We expect the stock to go up. And then we are selectively going to use that capital to reinvest in the business, do tuck-in acquisitions, right, and if necessary, continue to make the balance sheet better by getting rid of some expensive debt. So we've got a lot of capacity to do a lot of things with that cash.
Good for your house, good for the planet, good for the shareholders. Not bad, Jesse. Thank you so much. Jesse Singh, President and CEO of AZEK. I urge you to look at this stuff and the stock. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And I did not know the guy. I was like one of those satisfied customers. I should have bought the company. Everybody's back here to the break.
Great. Thanks.
I'm a sucker for a good comeback story, and comeback stories don't get much better than what we are seeing right now from The Gap. After just over 6 months of new management, this company is looking stronger than it has in ages. Yep, after languishing for years, The Gap brought in Richard Dixon, formerly of Mattel, as its new CEO. He took over in August, and by November, he already delivered a much better than feared quarter. At the same time, I wasn't sure how much of it came down to new management. But tonight, Gap reported again. This time, it's clear we're seeing a genuine turnaround. Company earned 49 cents per share, and also looking for 23 cents, along with higher than expected revenue and flat same-store sales. Wall Street was looking to be down. I love the gross margin story here, too. Even before the quarter, the stock was already up 88% since Dixon took over, and now it's moving higher again after hours trading. So how the heck did this happen? How could he pull it off? We got to know more about this story. Let's take a closer look with Richard Dixon. He's the new CEO of The Gap. Find out more about the quarter and what comes next. Mr. Dixon, congrats on the quarter and welcome to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be here.
Well, I got to tell Richard, your reputation precedes you. I spoke to you on Cries. Mattel loves you. I knew the guys at Jones. They thought you did a great job, but I want to say, from your first conference call, you seem to be enjoying yourself in a job where I have to tell you, other people felt they were toiling in a factory.
Come on, it's fashion. Fashion is fun. It's entertainment. We mean so much in the world. Our brands are recognized around the world. It's a storied company. It's an incredible opportunity, and I am having a lot of fun.
Now, you're starting out correctly, I think, with your priorities, maintaining and delivering financial and operational rigor, because that's what I was most worried about. I was afraid to recommend the stock, because I said, who knows, maybe the cash disappears. You went the other way. That was your first, before you even got to energizing culture and strengthening platform and taking the brands better.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, the quarter shows the results of that. We exceeded expectations, both top line and bottom line. We gained market share. And all of this has been driven by the strength in our two largest brands. But the efforts that we're making in operational and financial rigor, that's what's showing up in the numbers. We expanded our gross margin by 530 basis points, operating margin by 570 points. Our inventory is down 16% versus last year. So we're starting 2024 with a great inventory composition and new energy. We closed the year on strong financial footing. We're just under $2 billion in cash on the balance sheet. And we're entering with renewed energy on the reinvigoration of our brands. But we're going to continue to operate with discipline against strategic priorities, operational and financial rigor. And that's what's going to enable us to really reinvigorate this incredible portfolio.
And I think that helps you get someone like Zach Posen. I mean, when I mentioned that Zach Posen's with Gap, the first thing people say to me is, oh, give me a break. And then they say, hold it. Just a second. I saw the ads. I see the linen. I like the look. So you're attracting people that you maybe the old people couldn't attract.
Listen, this company is a magnet for talent. These are legendary brands. And Zach Posen is one of America's most celebrated designers. Zach's creative expertise, his cultural clarity, it's consistently evolved American fashion. And as he gets more immersed in the business, his influence will be considered really carefully. And the continuity of our brand reinvigoration will be a lot about creativity, design, and cultural relevance. We are thrilled with Zach, and there's lots of incredible talent at this company just being unlocked and incredibly excited about the future.
Now, when you say you're taking share, say, for Gap, who is it coming from? You don't have to necessarily pick out a company, but I'm trying to figure out, because in the old days, I remember one of your CEOs said, hey, we've got great data, so we're going to take share from XYZ. It never happened because the data wasn't fun. It's great to have, but it wasn't fun. You're winning from some people who, are they dowdy places, places that have lost their way? Because it's really remarkable, the share take here.
Look, I think Gap is a great story to spend a little time on. I mean, we've been reigniting this brand and drawing on what the brand was so special in the first place, really taking on-trend products and amplifying it in new ways that only Gap can. We're using music, we're using fashion as entertainment, and we're taking basic product, linen, denim, wovens, pants, and we're amplifying the narrative around these categories and driving share growth. Ultimately, you know, kids and baby, it's an incredible category for us, underrated in the context of its recognition. And we have incredible strength. Old Navy is the number one kids and baby brand in the U.S. Gap Inc. owns nearly 9% of the market. We've got incredible proven capabilities that resonate in this category and others. And it's our opportunity to continue to accelerate, becoming an even more important player in this segment, denim, active. We've got enormous opportunity with our capabilities.
Now, I know those are so huge that you can't even bother, I guess, to focus right now. I know you've got an eye on Banana Republic. I was at your Silicon Valley store outside of Bethlehem, and it was just it was just gorgeous. Everything was gorgeous. The prices were good. The people who worked there were fine. I mean, I did a major shop there. And yet at the same time, right, I know that you're not even really starting it yet. You could make that into one hell of a brand.
I love it. I'm glad you're a fan. It is a great brand. It's also, by the way, a sizable brand. This is nearly $2 billion with scale. It's got a competitive footprint that represents a particular opportunity within our portfolio. Broad-based consumer in the premium space, but really valuing style, luxury fabrics at great prices. The look of the brand, as you see, it can take you from adventure, travel, office, evening out. The brand's aesthetic, as we've dialed this up, it's headed in the right direction. It's going to take some time to reestablish the brand's momentum. The team that we have is working really hard to strengthen the fundamentals. As I've said many times internally, retail is detail, and we need to drive more consistent results, strengthening the fundamentals. But it is a great brand, waiting to be unlocked for the future.
Excellent. Now, I made a mistake recently, Richard, for one of my wife's 52 birthdays that she's had in the last year. I went into this site, Shein, and it is Temu. Now, of course, I think they're sending me everything just to flood the zone. But are these a problem? I mean, we're back in a landfillville. I thought we got away from landfillville. Gap is a much higher brand than landfill. But these guys have got price points that are ridiculous.
Yeah, look, the apparel industry is a competitive one. It's cutthroat. We have iconic brands. You know, we have a strong store footprint with the number two e-commerce platform apparel business in the country. We have incredible heritage. We have a tremendous opportunity by ourselves to reinvigorate these brands. We react to trends quickly, but we're not fast fashion.
Good.
You know, our commitment is to deliver style, quality, and value. And as a house of iconic brands, we take great pride in the trust that we build with customers who come to us for value and our values.
All right, well, let's leave. We have to leave it. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish up. I'm sorry.
Look, we have a legacy at Gap of creating positive impact in the communities that we operate in. Not just what we do, Jim, but how we do it. We take great pride in our purpose and our promise to customers.
I'm a believer. What can I tell you? I'm a believer. I saw in that last comment, I said, you are real. All right, that's Richard Dixon, president and CEO of Gap. Richard, thank you for coming on what is definitely a major turn for a storied group of stores that we all want to win. Mad Money's back after the break. It's time for the lightning round. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Let's start with Duval in California. Duval.
Hey, Jim. Booyah from sunny California. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Doing good. First time caller, but I've been listening to you. Thanks a lot for sharing all the wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My question today is about a social media management firm, market cap about $3.3 billion. Revenue last quarter, Q4, was up 34% from the prior quarter. And it's SPT, Sprout Social.
You know, I have to look at that company, to be honest, because that's in a hot spot, but the stock is not making money. And because the company's not making money, I have said no. But that doesn't mean I can be totally closed-minded because they're supposed to have an earnings breakout. Let me do more work. Let's go to Joanna in California. Joanna.
Hello.
Hi, it's Jim. You got him. What's up?
Oh, hi, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah.
Thanks for taking my call. Lucky.
Of course.
So, by the way, my boyfriend is an avid fan of yours for years and made me fascinated about your show. So what do you think about Mankind? Is it a buy, sell?
Well, you know, it's funny. Mankind, Joanne, is one of those that's just been hanging out there forever and is finally starting to look like it's going to have an earnings breakout. But I'm one of those people who's jaundiced about it. I've got to wait to see if they can come up with something. I just can't go in and say, you know what, looking better. I'm not going to go there. I need to go to Edwin in Georgia, please. Edwin.
Hey, how you doing, Jim? 21 years listening to you and a big booyah for you.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for watching. What's going on?
I got a question about Riot Platform. How you feel about that at 11, buying that or getting in at 11.97?
Look, if I want a Bitcoin miner, I'd rather just own Bitcoin, okay? Now, there are, or the Ethereum ETF that's going to be coming. Either one of those, I think, is superior to buying Riot Platforms. Let's go to Jeffrey in Massachusetts. Jeffrey.
How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing good. How about you, Jeffrey?
So, I'm calling tonight about Dutch Bros. Are there going to be a perk P to E, or do we wait for a drip?
I've been doing a lot of work on Dutch Bros, thinking that they just had that big offering, and it's the price held. The stock did not break down. That said to me that maybe Dutch Bros is finally turning. They overexpanded. I was upset that they did that because it's such a good brand. They seem to have gotten a little more religion. They're slowing things down, and that is going to make it so it's a stock to own. I need to go to Bill in California. Bill.
Hey, good morning or afternoon.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
Oh, not much, Jimmy. I'm looking at the name Transocean Rig.
Two down and out. You know, and I've been around I've just been around the oil patch too long to know that if you're going to buy anybody in that space, you're either going to have to buy SLB, the old Schlumberger, or you're going to buy Halliburton, or you're going to buy nobody. And that's really simple as it comes. How about Craig in Florida? Craig.
Jimmy, Craig in the Sunshine State. Good evening, sir.
Oh, man, how are you in the Southland? What's happening?
Jim, this is the third time I'm calling in about this name in the past year and a half. I know how you feel about it and the CEO, and at this point, none of us are interested in how it went from 4 to 8 inside of a year anymore. We're tired of hearing how great this company's doing, and it's never traded over by a deal price, even in this raging bull market. 25 years of investing, I've never seen a growth story so strong and prolific, and the stock behave so weak. I'm asking you on behalf of a very large community of committed, fed-up retail shareholders who have just about had it, can you please get Mr. Noto on your show to re-inspire his bullish SoFi shareholders?
SoFi, okay, well, what happened is that the stock ran, and they did this 1.25 convertible senior note, and it crushed the stock. I don't blame the people wanting to have that money at that price, but that's what hurt it, sir, and I still believe. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab.
Horse races are a given in this business, but you can't get too caught up in the racetrack if you're trying to make big money. This morning we learned that Novo Nordisk, the giant Danish pharmaceutical company, may have passed Eli Lilly in the race to develop a pill version of the revolutionary weight loss drugs. Right now, these GLP-1s are all injections. Lilly's been working on a pill too, known as orforglipron, and this pill caused patients to lose 7 to 8% of their body weight after 12 weeks. 7 to 8's not bad. Not as strong as the injectable version, but a major advance for anyone who doesn't want to take a shot every week. Today, though, we found out that Novo Nordisk pill amisetrin is clearly superior, with an average of 13.1% weight loss after 12 weeks. Not bad, huh? And so far, it's been both safe and well-tolerated. Of course, it'll be several years before either of these pills hit the market. More important, though, armchair students of this horse race know that Lilly's been pretty tight-lipped about what it's working on, but I have to believe they're not far away from a pill that can offer similar levels of weight loss. Still, there's an obvious question. We own Lilly for the Chapel Trust, so why not just sell it and swap it in Novo Nordisk if in the news, right? First, these GLP-1s may be the biggest drug category in history, and there's room for both companies. Second, what may matter the most right now isn't necessarily the actual particulars of the drug as the production capacity to make it. Lilly has much deeper pockets than Novo, and it's pouring money into big factories around the world in order to meet demand. So far, Novo's lagged. Third, the doctors writing prescriptions for these GLP-1 drugs seem pretty agnostic about the shots. They treat them as almost interchangeable. It's just, you just try to get what's available. The Novo pill might be the holy grail, something far superior to what Lilly has in the works, but the odds don't favor that. There's plenty of room for both companies, but at the moment, we want to own the company with the production capacity, not the one that might have an ephemeral lead in the GLP-1 pill development horse race. Just consider this. Lilly's Zepbound shot is widely considered to have a better weight loss profile than Novo's Wegovy, also known as Ozempic. That's the most important criteria right now. Yet, again, doctors seem to treat them as interchangeable. Why am I supposed to swap it now out of Novo and in Lilly? It doesn't work like that. Of course, there are horse races all over the place. Take cybersecurity, where it's Palo Alto Networks, which gave disappointing guidance, versus CrowdStrike on last night, which gave you a clean beat and raise that sent its stock into the stratosphere yesterday. Now, Palo Alto's Nikesh Arora has taken a traditional, somewhat pedestrian firewall company, partially through acquisitions, transformed into something that can give customers a soup-to-nuts cybersecurity offering. Meanwhile, George Kurtz from CrowdStrike says his technology is best in class while offering a lower cost of ownership and a seamless installation. Palo Alto's platformizing, making sure that all your security bases are covered. So is CrowdStrike ahead of Palo Alto right now? Well, the stocks say absolutely it is. CrowdStrike's been the better bet in recent months. But you know what? The cybersecurity world, it's colossal, with more hackers than we ever imagined a few years ago. And I think Palo Alto can come back with something competitive to what CrowdStrike's offering right now. Look, they're both run by very, very smart people. They both can pivot and make changes. Is the old firewall business that Palo Alto was built on in steep decline? It sure seems like it. However, betting against Nikesh Arora has been a sucker's game. Do I wish we owned CrowdStrike instead of Palo Alto for the Chapel Trust right now? Of course! But only for this past month, because over the past 3 years, Palo Alto's still up 157%. CrowdStrike's only up 80%. You need to stay up on all of these horse race situations, but resist the urge to believe that one contender can pull away from the competition for good. Right now, the jockey is just as important as the horse. George Kurtz and Nikesh Arora are competitive CEOs, great at what they do, and this industry is huge enough for the both of them. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'd find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.